500-5266. Be a part of the Cabu family. Make that contribution today, right now. We do need that. We are, oh gosh, we're just inches away, centimeters away, millimeters away from our goal for this program, for the Cabu News this evening. The volunteers work really hard to put the show together for you today. Let them know that you care with a contribution. 877-500-5266.
Don't know how to put this, but I'm kind of a big deal.
KBOO is proud to co-sponsor the Friends of Jordan 5K and Kids Run, Saturday, October 11th at 9 a.m. Friends of Jordan is an organization that provides support for families as they go through the trials of serious childhood illness. This fun run and walk will raise funds for Adult in Reno, a 22-month-old from Salem. Again, that's the Friends of Jordan 5K and Kids Run on Saturday, October 11th at 9 a.m. at Forest Grove High School, 1401 Nichols Lane, in Forest Grove. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the home page under community events.
You are tuned to KBOO Portland. Up next is Treasures from the Archive. We remember Judy Berry.
She's waiting, limbs and leaves, and the blood stains, the ashes. All those knees, oh, Judy, gather your seed.
Judy Berry was an American environmentalist and labor leader, an organizer of Earth First campaigns against logging in the ancient redwood forests of Northern California in the 1980s and 90s. Judy Berry died in 1997. This is the speech that Judy made as a keynote speaker at the Northwest Regional Conference of the National Lawyers Guild in the fall of 1994. Judy Berry spoke about her history as an environmental organizer and about Redwood Summer, and the bomb that went off in her car in May of 1990 on the eve of Redwood Summer. She talks about her arrest by the FBI after the bombing, as well as COINTELPRO history and more. Here is Judy Berry.
We're going to start with a song. We played this song on KBOO today, so if anybody heard this from KBOO, now you get to really listen to the words. And the song kind of, I guess it summarizes the speech, and it's about the bombing and what happened. It wasn't just that I was bombed. I was bombed and nearly killed and then promptly arrested for carrying the bomb that was used to try to kill me. They said that the bomb was in the back seat where we could clearly see it, and that I had loaded my guitar and fiddle on top of it, so I must have known that it was there. But when we looked at the police photos of the crime scene, not only was the hole in the car clearly under the car seat, not in the back seat, there was the guitar and the fiddle. And, you know, they said that they were like right on top of the bomb, but there they were in the pictures, relatively intact. So me and Daryl Cherney, who was my organizing and singing companion and was in the car with me at the time, wrote this song called "The FBI Stole My Fiddle." A few things you need to know is that, well, I guess you all know that COINTELPRO, what that was, the FBI campaign to discredit and disrupt activists. You need to know that that was J. Edgar Hoover, of course, and William Sessions was in charge of the FBI at the time when I was bombed. And the local, the San Francisco agent in charge was named Richard Held. And he was also involved in the framing of Leonard Peltier and also of Geronimo Gijaga Pratt from the Black Panthers. And then the last thing you need to know to understand the song is that right now the head of the FBI is named Louis Free. So with that out of the way, we'll start the song. And this is Alicia Littletree. Well, I was driving out of Oakland on a tour for Redwood Summer when a bomb went off inside my car. It was a major bummer. They blamed me for the bomb that almost took my life. But there's one last thing that they did, one last twist of the knife. The FBI stole my fiddle.
They stole my fiddle.
Stole my fiddle.
They stole my fiddle.
The FBI stole my fiddle. And I want my fiddle back. The next day in the papers, although it made no sense, was a picture of my fiddle and they called it evidence. They took away my Birkenstocks, they took away my car. But when they took my fiddle, well, you know they went too far. The FBI stole my fiddle.
Stole my fiddle.
They stole my fiddle.
They stole my fiddle.
William Sessions stole my fiddle. And I want my fiddle back. They said my strings was fuses, my bow it was the light. And down inside my fiddle hole I stashed my dynamite. So when I stroke my fuse strings with my fiddle bow, you better run for cover, cause this fiddle might just blow. The FBI stole my fiddle.
They stole my fiddle.
Stole my fiddle.
They stole my fiddle.
J. Edgar Hoover stole my fiddle. And I want my fiddle back. Well, Special Agent Richard Held is the man behind the show. He helped frame Leonard Peltier and jail Geronimo. He falsified the evidence. Life sentences, no bail. It's time to get him freed and let's put Richard Held in jail. The FBI stole my fiddle.
Stole my fiddle.
Stole my fiddle.
They stole my fiddle.
Richard Held stole my fiddle.
Yeah, he did.
And I want my fiddle back. Now Louis Freeze got my fiddle, and I want my fiddle back.
Thank you.
Thank you. So the story of this outrageous bombing and arrest and the lawsuit that we're now suing the FBI is, of course, a story of the resurgence of COINTELPRO. COINTELPRO counterintelligence program was J. Edgar Hoover's program. It started, I guess, in the 50s. I don't know. It kind of really reared its ugly head in the 60s and 70s. It was J. Edgar Hoover's program to, in his words, disrupt, misdirect, isolate, and neutralize domestic dissident groups, just activists, people like us. It targeted whatever group they didn't happen to like, but some of the really most well-known targets, of course, are the Black Panther Party and the American Indian Movement, which were nearly destroyed by these tactics. And the tactics that used in COINTELPRO included things like surveillance of activists, infiltration of activist groups, and disruption by agent provocateurs. It included the use of false information and death threats to terrorize the leaders. It included framings of leaders and assassinations of political leaders. And in 1975, after the Black Panther Associates broke into the FBI office in Media, Pennsylvania in 1971 and liberated their files, that's how we even found out that COINTELPRO existed. So after that happened, they succeeded by 1975 in getting a congressional investigation of COINTELPRO. And it was by the Church Committee, Senator Church in the Senate, and they concluded that COINTELPRO violated our most basic civil rights and that it was illegal. And it was officially disbanded. But what we see in the bombing case is that it never was disbanded, that it continued. They may not call it COINTELPRO anymore, but they've used the very same tactics. And not only have we seen the continuation of COINTELPRO, but I also see in this case the privatization of COINTELPRO, that it's not just the FBI that's using these tactics now. Well, first of all, privatization in two ways. One is the government secret police in the direct service of the corporations. In our case, what we were doing, we were trying to stop Louisiana Pacific and Georgia Pacific from cutting down every tree in the forest. And the FBI stepped in on their side here to help disrupt our struggle against the destruction of the forest. So that's one reason, is because it's the government secret police in service of the corporations. But also in this case, I find the corporations themselves directly using the very same COINTELPRO tactics that were designed and perfected by J. Edgar Hoover and the FBI.
And you are listening to a 1994 talk by environmental activist and agitator Judy Berry about the counterintelligence program of the U.S. government that targeted activists throughout the 70s and 80s. This is Ani. I'm here with Jackie. And we are here on this first day of our fall membership drive here for KABU, your community radio station, asking for your support so that you can keep this information coming to you. KABU has an extensive archive, really 30 years of public affairs archives, 40 years of public affairs archives of movers and shakers, agitators, organizers, elected officials, all manner of people, cultural icons that have been through our studios or through the area, and our volunteers have been out recording them so that you can have these talks, you can have these lectures. And now we are bringing forth this history again because, you know, sadly, it's still relevant is the problem. You know, there are still government programs targeting activists. Sure, it's not called COINTELPRO anymore, but we need to know this history so that we can understand our present. Judy Berry was a fighter and an organizer for social and environmental justice. The common denominator in all the causes she fought for was her indignation over injustice, whether in the form of racism, sexism, political repression, economic exploitation, or ecological destruction. And Judy Berry was also a friend to KABU. She was in our studios often. She was interviewed by myself when I was first starting out doing public affairs here on KABU, and we became close friends for several years before her death. And she was an amazing woman. I'm glad that we are still able to bring her information and her words out to our listeners. And right now, I got to ask you for your support. It's well worth it. Please consider giving $5 a month, $10 a month. Become a sustainer of KABU, your community radio station, and uplift your entire community. Just once a month, make that commitment. 877-500-5266 or online, kboo.fm.
You know, there's a lot of content that you wouldn't really get here at KABU normally, and we go out there and hunt them down and get them in the studio. And as Ani said, they have an extensive collection of very important speakers, you know, interviews and things like that with some very amazing people, such as Judy Berry. Now, you're also wondering, how can I help get the word out about this membership drive? Well, we have quite a few things. We have a hashtag, support KABU. Also, if you've been in our studio, have any pictures, post them on Instagram, tag us at KABU or hashtag support KABU. Give us a call at 877-500-5266. Every dollar helps with this programming.
Also, like our page on Facebook. You can follow along with news and giveaways during this membership drive on Facebook. That's KABU Community Radio. Also, you can communicate with us on Twitter at KBOO and let us know your thoughts and opinions. But right now, call with your support at 877-500-5266.
We'll now return to the speech Judy Berry made in Portland in the fall of 1994 at the regional conference of the National Lawyers Guild.
So the man in charge of my case at the FBI, as I said in the song, is somebody named Richard Held. And he was one of the architects of COINTELPRO, him and his daddy, who's also named Richard Held. He's been in the FBI for 25 years, and he made himself notorious in some of this COINTELPRO stuff. So he was in charge, they actually called it COINTELPRO then, And in the Black Panthers, in the disruption of the Black Panthers, Richard Held was in charge of the Los Angeles COINTELPRO program against the Black Panthers. And so as that director, what he did was, one of the things he's most famous for, he fomented fighting, factional fighting within the Black movement by, he had these cartoons drawn, these very insulting cartoons drawn from one faction to another, from Black Panthers to United Slaves, which was another Black group, actually Black nationalist group in Los Angeles. And they were tremendously insulting, and he'd have one go to the United Slaves and one go to the Black Panthers, and all of them were coming from the FBI. And eventually this successfully fomented so much discord that there was actually some shootouts and a couple of Panthers were killed along with the help of some more provocateurs. And Richard Held was very proud of himself and thought that was real successful. Richard Held was named as one of the three FBI agents directly responsible for the framing and jailing of Geronimo Gijaga. I don't know, some people might not even be old enough to remember. It's disturbing to me how few people remember this story. But back when I was in college, you know, it was Free Geronimo. I don't know how many of you all remember that. But anyway, Geronimo has been in jail for 21 years for a crime that he didn't commit. What happened to him was, first they fomented all this fighting in the party until Huey Newton expelled Geronimo because Huey thought that Geronimo was an FBI agent, thanks to the FBI's misinformation. Then all of a sudden the FBI arrested Geronimo for a 5-year-old murder, a murder that had happened 5 years ago, and it happened in Santa Monica, in Southern California. But Geronimo, at the time of the murder, had been at a Black Panther party meeting in Oakland. The FBI has wiretap records to prove it, but they still arrested Geronimo for something that he was 400 miles away from. And it was a murder on a tennis court where a white woman was murdered by a black man. And Geronimo's car was seen driving away from the scene, being driven by an FBI agent named Julius Butler, who had infiltrated the Black Panthers. So Geronimo was arrested for this crime, and he was convicted on the perjured testimony of Julius Butler and others. And the jury has since said that had they known that Julius Butler was an FBI agent, they would not have convicted him, but they won't give him another trial. And he's still in jail today, 21 years later. So that's one of the accomplishments of Richard Held. Richard Held was also involved in the framing and jailing of Leonard Peltier in the Reign of Terror on the Pine Ridge Reservation, in which these, they were called the Goons, the Guardians of the Oglala Nation, were native people who were corrupted by the money and power of it, and the FBI armed them and funded them and gave them immunity virtually from prosecution as they attacked AIM members. And 69 AIM members were killed and hundreds of them were attacked. And finally, when AIM armed themselves to protect themselves, the FBI came into the reservation shooting. There was a firefight, and it's been proved many times over that Leonard couldn't possibly have fired the gun that killed the FBI agent, but he also is still in jail, and they will not allow him to have another trial to release the evidence that would exonerate him. So that's the kind of history that this man has, and I cannot describe the cold terror of waking up in the hospital, crippled for life with my leg in traction, and finding out that this man was accusing me of bombing myself, of blowing myself up with my own bomb. But once I did begin to realize these things, I've discovered, looking back at the events that had preceded the bombing, that many of these very same COINTELPRO techniques had been at work in the Redwood region. And actually, the attack on Earth First did not start with us or the Redwood region. It started in Arizona. And Dave Foreman, I'm sure a lot of you may know, was one of the founders of Earth First. And the FBI targeted him because they wanted to discredit him to destroy Earth First. What they did was they infiltrated the Earth First group. They spent about $2 million over several years infiltrating the Earth First group in Arizona. And an FBI agent who was named Michael Fain, he said his name was Michael Tate, infiltrated this group, and he became real good friends with some of the central activists in the group. And he did such atrocious things as go to Thanksgiving dinner at one of their houses wearing a body wire and stuff like that. But anyway, he infiltrated this group and became close with the leaders, and another man named Ron Frazier also was working for the FBI. And out of a core group of five people, two of them were FBI agents, Ron Frazier and Michael Tate. And what they did was they convinced these Earth First activists to try to take down this power line in the Arizona desert. And the FBI agents bought the blowtorch, taught the Earth Firsters how to use it, drove them to the action, financed the thing, and when the Earth Firsters began trying to take the power line down with the blowtorch, the FBI rose up in helicopters and SWAT teams and everything and arrested them. It was a trap. So the Arizona power line action, for which Earth First is probably known, was actually a joint action, FBI and Earth First. and I think that it fits the category of COINTELPRO operations called misdirect. It took activists who indeed were recommending, Earth First indeed was advocating what's called monkey wrenching, which is essentially politically oriented sabotage. Earth First is not an armed struggle group, trying to make us do something greater, provoke us with the provocateurs, trying to get us to do something more than we would have done that would have discredited us and allow them to move in and try to destroy the group. And there was a great desire to associate Earth First with explosives in people's minds. In fact, Earth First has never been involved in the use of guns or explosives, and a lot of people think those power lines were blown up in Arizona, and they were not. They were trying to cut them down with the FBI's blowtorch. And in the Arizona operation was called Operation Thermcon. And the FBI agents kept telling the activists, well, we can get you thermite to take out these things. But the activists were not into that. So I think that all through this, including in the bombing of me, that there's a desire to associate Earth First with explosives in the public's mind.
Judy Berry, Earth First and labor activist on the need to support community radio.
Well, I guess I just want to say for the pledge drive to support your public radio stations. Down where I live, the public radio stations KMUD and KZYX have been really important organizing tools for us to even have a movement, for us to get information out that isn't filtered by the corporations. Public radio is a really precious thing, and I think that everybody should support it. So if you want to hear stuff like this on the radio, send in your money and keep it going.
That's right. If you'd like to help support community radio that gets the events out there that you don't normally hear about on mainstream radio, go ahead and donate. Every little bit helps. You know, $20, $5, whatever you can. Give us a call at 877-500-5266.
Because we need to hear from you right now. We're looking to raise about $200 for this segment of programming, and that's easily taken care of when you go ahead and step forward and say, this is your responsibility. It's your turn to support independent media and to make sure we stay independent. We rely on you, the grassroots, to keep us strong. This is about grassroots organizing. That was at the heart of really what Judy Berry's message was. It takes each of us working together, forming strong communities to resist the dominant culture, the corruption, the echo devastation, the oppressions that are happening. And when we effectively do that, sometimes we raise the attention of those agencies that she's talking about tonight. Judy Berry was, of course, targeted by the COINTELPRO programs pretty fiercely, as was Earth First overall. And KABU was there in the 90s bringing you that information and that news. And we are still here talking about state repression, and we are still here talking about the necessary things we all need to know to make informed decisions and to be a part of resistance culture. It's important that you support us right now with a little of your hard-earned money, because, in fact, it's putting it together. It's collective action that gets the goods every time. 877-500-5266. It's 877-500-5266. $10 a month. $15 a month, $20 a month. What can you afford for your community? A one-time contribution of $40 or $60 is also appreciated. You can do it on your credit card. You can have us bill you. You can walk on in person, and pay your pledge that way. You can connect with us however it is comfortable for you. Online, kboo.fm, or 877-500-5266.
KABU is here to help try and save the world one program at a time. And how can you help? Well, all donations of the $75 level or greater can have a tree planted by Friends of Trees in addition to a regular thank you gift. You can do your part to offset climate change by contributing to us today. 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm. Again, every bit helps. $5, $6.25, whatever you can donate really would help us get the word out. 83% is directly from individuals. That's where we get our money, is from you, the listener, who cares about these issues and cares about saving the world.
I want to thank a few restaurants that have donated food today to help the membership drive. I want to thank the Roxy at 1121 Southwest Stark Street. In the heart of the Glamour District since 1994, theroxydiner.com. Cannon's Rib Express at 5410 Northeast 33rd Avenue, serving Hickory Smoked Barbecue, vegetarian fare, cannonsribexpress.com. Russell Street Barbecue at 325 Northeast Russell Street. Russell Street Barbecue, committed to using sustainable meat, fish, and produce and offering a variety of sauces and sides, vegetarian options, beer, wine, and full bar. Russell Street Barbecue, RussellStreetBBQ.com. And Grocery Getter Organic, specializing in home delivery of organic groceries, independent and locally owned. More information on Grocery Getter at GGETTER.com. And we want to thank you when you do your part in participating in community radio. At $15 a month, if you are able to renew your KBOO membership or become a KBOO member today at $15 a month, you can pick up a Climate Change Action Pack. This special offer is only available today. It's celebrating and honoring the programming that was put together around turning the tide on climate change. This included an exclusive interview with Naomi Klein, who was in the studio this afternoon with Teresa Mitchell. It also includes an interview with Corey Morningstar, an independent investigative journalist, writer, and environmental activist, Arun Gupta, Naomi Oreskes, excuse me, George Marshall, and many, many other people. It also includes a seed packet for attracting pollinators and preserving our local food systems, a tree planted in your name by Friends of Trees, a subscription to Yes Magazine, a Journal of Positive Futures, the DVD Disruption, and really, oh, so much more. I mean, there's just a ton of information, a ton of stuff, and it's all yours when you join at $15 a month. It adds up to $180 at the course of a year. That's the level I support KBOO at. I encourage other people, you know, please consider supporting your community. $15 a month. Take a friend out to lunch. It's sort of like that rate, yeah. You know? That's take your entire community out to lunch once a month. Contribute $15 a month and let us know you would like this special Climate Change Action Pack. However you want to do it, just please do connect in now. Give at the level you can afford. Support this work. Judy Berry, an amazing activist. We're going to go back to her words in just one moment. Please make that phone call now. 877-500-5266.
We'll now return to the keynote speech Judy Berry made in the fall of 1994 in Portland at the regional conference of the National Lawyers Guild.
In the Redwood region, the lead up to the bombing consisted of mass organizing. And as this type of outrage began to come to light, we did things like we sat in the trees. They pioneered that technique in Oregon. You know, we'd sit up on platforms, these little 2-foot by 6-foot platforms, way up in the trees and hang banners and protest it. And we'd chain ourselves to bulldozers and block logging trucks, things like that. Standard, classic, nonviolent civil disobedience actions. And as we became more successful and as our activities began to attract more attention, increasingly violence was used as a means to suppress us. Just like with the goons, although on a much smaller scale, the local police were complicit and turned their head and wouldn't arrest anybody that attacked an Earth Firster. And there were several serious attacks on Earth Firsters, including a 50-year-old woman who was punched and had her nose broken and knocked unconscious, and myself and two of my children, actually, and some other activists were rammed by a log truck that didn't even hit its brakes, and it was the same log truck that we had blockaded a day earlier. So there was a type of things like that going on. And those were the things that caused us to call for Redwood Summer. We realized that we couldn't do this by ourselves, and that just like Redwood Summer was originally called Mississippi Summer in the California Redwoods. And what we did is we based it on our knowledge of history of the civil rights movement. And we thought that the situation was analogous to that in Mississippi at the time of Mississippi Freedom Summer, in that there was this horrendous violence going on to the forest And there was also violence going on to the activists. But as long as no one but us knew about it, nobody cared. But we thought that with the eyes of the nation on us, that people wouldn't tolerate either the slaughter of 2,000-year-old redwood trees or the violence that was being used against activists. So we called for students and others from all over the country to come in and engage in nonviolent civil disobedience to try and stop the slaughter of the redwoods. And when we did that, and when it became clear that it was really going to happen, that we were building the infrastructure and the people were coming, they stepped it up. They stepped up the level of harassment. And one of the things that happened was many of us, but me in particular, began to receive a series of increasingly frightening death threats. And the scariest one was a photograph of me with a rifle scope and crosshairs drawn over my face. And when I showed it to the local police, they said, "We don't have the manpower to investigate. If you turn up dead, then we'll investigate." And when I went and complained to the Board of Supervisors, our county government agency, about the treatment by the local police, they said, "You brought it on yourself, Judy." Still, we kept going. Still, we kept calling for nonviolence. We renounced the practice of tree spiking, which is a widely unpopular with a lot of people, because we realized that it indeed was, it was driving a wedge between us and timber workers, who were our natural allies, and we were building alliances with them. And the more credibility that we built, the more they wanted to discredit us. So fake press releases started appearing. And the fake press releases had our logo. It said Earth First on it, but they called for violence and they called for tree spiking. They claimed to be from us, but we didn't produce them. They were distributed by the big timber companies at meetings on the clock in the workplace and, you know, given to the press, who continued to treat them as real even though we denied them and they didn't have our names on them and all that stuff. So the bombing didn't just happen in a vacuum. There was virtually a lynch mob atmosphere that was whipped up in the community before I was bombed. And we were trying very hard to maintain the call for nonviolence and to maintain our focus under this huge disruption campaign. But on May 24th, 1990, as I was driving with Daryl Cherney to a concert that we were going to be doing to promote Redwood Summer at one of the colleges, the bomb blew up in the car and it nearly killed me. I knew immediately it was a bomb. I knew as soon as it went off that it was a bomb. I felt it rip through me. There was no question. Every single witness in the world knew that it was a bomb. That's just, you know, what it was. It was clearly designed to kill me. It wasn't just designed to wound me. I don't know why I survived it or even how I survived it. But what happened was, within minutes of the bombing, the FBI appeared on the scene. And according to the records, normally car bombing shouldn't even be the FBI, it should be the ATF. So, you know, normally if it was just a regular car bombing, it wouldn't even be the FBI's business. Only if it was terrorists, only if it was our bomb, would it even be the FBI's business to be there. But they appeared within minutes, virtually. And the FBI files, the first one it has, you know, so about 10 minutes after the bomb goes off, the first FBI agent shows up. It says in the files, "I was driving around on my lunch hour looking for an apron for my child to use in the school play when I heard a bomb go off, so I went over to see what was happening." Anyway, so Agent McKinney got there. He was one of the very first people to arrive, and he quickly called the aptly named FBI terrorist squad. Squad 13 arrived on the scene, and their bomb expert, Frank Doyle, Special Agent Frank Doyle, kind of took over the scene and directed the collection of evidence and all of that stuff. And it says on my arrest warrant that Frank Doyle says that the bomb was in the back seat of the car, therefore we should have seen it, and therefore we knew it was our bomb. It was on the back seat floorboard. They took out the seat of the car at the scene. One of the police has said that when the front seat was in the car, it said there was a hole right through the front seat. You could see through to the street below. The back seat was completely intact. And yet they all collaborated. They all suffered from mass hypnosis, or they all collaborated in a lie. You can take your choice. But every single police and FBI agent there said, "Oh yeah, there's a hole in the back seat." And nobody notices the hole in the front seat. And anyway, so what the Oakland police have testified to us, it was the Oakland police who actually arrested us. They said that as soon as they got to the bomb scene, the FBI was there, that there was 12 to 15 FBI agents. And they took the Oakland police aside and they said, "Hey, we know these people, they're terrorists, we've got investigations going from them. They dropped these power lines in Arizona, they dropped these other power lines in Santa Cruz, they did this bomb there and that bomb there," and, you know, stuff that we certainly have known. It's kind of like being Pretty Boy Floyd. It's like every crime in California was added to our name. So anyway, they told us all these horror stories about who we were, and the Oakland police quickly agreed to arrest us for the bombing. They charged us with transporting explosives. I was arrested within 3 hours of the time that the bomb went off. I was arrested while I was still unconscious in surgery. Daryl was arrested 12 hours later. And now normally the bail for transporting explosives is only $3,000, but that's not enough for a terrorist. So they went to the judge and they got a bail enhancement. They got our bail raised. And they got our bail raised to $100,000. And the reason that they got the bail raised, according to the records, is because we were a flight risk and a danger to the public. I was unconscious in the hospital with my pelvis broken in 10 places and my leg in traction. They declared that not only were we suspects in the bombing, but that we were the only suspects. And they conducted this huge press smear all over the country about the Earth First bombers who blew themselves up with their own bomb. It's the only time I ever made the front page of the New York Times. It's the most publicity I think that Earth First has probably ever gotten. So they conducted this huge press smear to convince the public that not only were Earth Firsters violent terrorists who carry bombs around in our cars, but that we are stupid violent terrorists who carry them under our own car seat. So since we were the only suspects, the entire investigation consisted of raiding our houses and confiscating materials. But when they did, they had a problem. They found no weapons, no explosives, no manuals on how to make bombs, nothing that you would expect to find in the house of a bomber. Instead, they confiscated 111 household items: red magic markers, duct tape, Elmer's glue, crazy glue. Oh, you know, compare this with the bloody glove and all those other things. that was their idea of evidence in this case. The bomb was wrapped in nails. They took finishing nails out of my window trim, trying to find matching nails. And although they widely reported in the paper that they had matching nails, it turned out that they did not. And the other thing that happened that really hurt their case is the nature of the bomb itself. From their own bomb expert, from the FBI's own bomb expert, we discovered that the bomb, well, was an anti-personnel bomb. It was wrapped with nails for shrapnel effect. And it was indeed hidden under my car. It was under my car seat in a place where I couldn't possibly have seen it. It was also wrapped in a blue towel, which made it harder, and they found pieces of this towel in my car seat, embedded in my car seat, and embedded in my jeans. So they certainly knew that this was under me, that the police knew this all along. And the other thing the police knew all along that they never once said in the newspapers is that this bomb was triggered by a motion device. It was triggered by the motion of my car. And the motion device consisted of about a half-inch big ball bearing that had to roll and connect two contact points in order to make the bomb go off. So this isn't exactly the kind of bomb that you would be transporting under your car seat. It's a bomb that was put there to try to kill me. But in defiance of everything, they continue to pursue this. But the evidence was so weak, and the public support, thank you everybody who did, the public support was so strong, and the evidence was so weak, that after 8 weeks of smearing us all over the country, they were forced to admit, or actually they never actually admitted. The district attorney refused to bring charges against us because there was no evidence. And the FBI still said that we were the only suspects. We were just, you know, stupid enough to carry this bomb, but too clever to catch. At that point, they would have just been happy to just let the whole thing disappear. But people wouldn't let them do that. Again, public support was what kept this case alive. And people were writing to their congressmen, and there was 50 mainstream environmental, labor, and women's groups who signed a petition demanding a congressional investigation. And there was all kinds of public pressure on the FBI to widen the investigation and to include, to have other suspects besides me and Daryl. So in the face of that kind of pressure, they did indeed widen the pool of suspects, and this is phase two. In phase one of the bombing, they arrested us and said we were the only suspects. Phase two, they said, okay, we'll look at other suspects, and they went up into our region and they expanded the bombing investigation to include not just me and Daryl, but all other environmental activists in our region. So as if they hadn't done enough damage yet with the bombing, with the arrest, and the whole way that they treated this, they then proceeded in the summer of 1990 to use this bombing as a pretext. They conducted a bogus investigation of the bombing. They used it as a pretext to investigate Earth First.
And And this is Ani. I'm here with Jackie. We are listening to a public affairs archived recording of Judy Berry talking in 1994 about Earth First, about the bomb that she was the target of, her and Daryl Cherney, another Earth First activist, as well as the COINTELPRO operation and investigation surveillance programs that were active in targeting activists and harassing activists throughout the 70s and 80s. You get this information on community radio. Why? Because we have volunteers that care passionately about these issues, and they come in and they take the training to learn how to create radio. That's part of KABU's mission, is to provide that training, to actually let people know how to use the media, and so that we can make our own media and we can make sure that there is that spectrum on the dial where we can share information that's important and enriching to communities. That's why we exist, so that we can create these programs, so that we can inform each other as community members, one-to-one. That's why we need your support right now. You, right now, are our grassroots support. You're what keeps us independent. You're what keeps us strong. And right now, we need to hear from you at 877-500-5266. And let us know that you're there and that you give a damn and that you want to become a member of KABU today, that you want to support this kind of information, this kind of analysis. We have been doing special programming all day long about resisting climate change, and now looking at the COINTELPRO programs of harassment, listening to Judy Berry's voice. Please do give us a call, 877-500-5266, and join us in a sustaining way at just $5 a month or $10 a month. It's easy to do. You can also do it online at kboo.fm.
And if you're interested in helping to fight climate change, all donations at the $75 level or greater can have a tree planted by Friends of Trees in addition to a regular thank you gift. So do your part to offset climate change by contributing today. Again, that's 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm. Let us know you're there. Let us know you're listening. Let us know that we help represent you in the best way possible. We train people who come in and they get their voices out, and we may want to make sure that the people of Portland are heard. 83% of our funds that we get from this drive is directly from you, the listener. So help support us, help get these issues out, because no one else is going to report on them. That's what we're here for.
And that's where you come in. Mm-hmm. You keep us that strong, independent voice in your community. You provide that independence with your financial support. It takes about $88 an hour to keep KABU on the air. Mm-hmm. That's the light bill. It's the equipment. It's all of those expenses that go into, you know, holding a building together and having a small staff of about 8 people, coordinating the work of 500 volunteers to bring you this resource. You can be a part of that right now if you join us at $7.50 a month. Throughout the year, in little tiny bite-sized, easy-to-digest pieces, we will get your contribution, and it adds up to $90 at the end of that year, and that's about an hour's worth of program time that you have personally supported financially. It's a way that you can really make an impact here at your community radio station, KBOO. Do give us a call and join us this evening, 877-500-5266, or online at kboo.fm.
We'll now return to the speech Judy Berry made in Portland in the fall of 1994.
And they began a sweeping investigation of Earth First that mirrored some of the tactics from the Red Scares. I don't know how many of you know about the CISPES scandal they had with the FBI in the early 1980s, where they collected the names of thousands of people whose only crime was attending a meeting and stuff like that. Well, they did something like that to Earth First. What they did is they came up to the Redwood region. They said, okay, we're looking for the bomber. So the first thing they did was they wrote a letter to all the little small town newspapers up in our rural area. And it said, we're looking for the bomber, so we want to look through your letters to the editor's files to see if we can find any letters that match some of these things in this case. So the largest paper, you know, the corporate paper, the big sophisticated city paper, said, no way, you don't have the right to go looking through our letters. Think of the chilling effect on freedom of speech if people knew their letters were being turned over to the FBI. But in the rural areas,
10 newspaper editors said, sure, come on in. And they let them look, and they confiscated published and unpublished letters. Nearly all of the letters that they confiscated were from environmentalists, and none of them had anything to do with the bombing. Letters like On Healing the Earth by Forrest Feather Walker. There was one, most of these letters, they just had a whole bunch of them. Mostly they just collected them in some kind of database and didn't do anything with them. But in one case, this one letter, it was a poem, and it started out, has anybody ever known their spirits? And it was called First Impressions, Pokhara Valley. And for some unknown reason, the FBI decided that this letter writer was a suspect. There was no similarity in content and handwriting and typewriting, anything to anything else in this case. And yet they decided that this letter was suspect. They sent it to the lab for fingerprints, for handwriting analysis, and to the behavioral science lab in Quantico, Virginia, to see whether the person who wrote this letter had the same personality type that might have also planted the bomb. So when they were done with the letters, with violating our rights to free speech and privacy, going through people's letters to the editor, they also interviewed all the local police. Now, this is a rural area with the police are generally, it's controlled by Big Timber. They don't call it King Timber for nothing. So these timber towns usually have pro-timber police. These were the same police that allowed them to ram us with trucks and break our noses, etc., and refused to arrest. But the FBI went in and asked them questions like, name the prominent environmentalists in your town. Not name the Earth Firsters, not name people who might have been involved in the bombing. Name the prominent environmentalists. And the police said, well, let's see, the environmental center is run by so-and-so. And we, you know, they gave all the names and address, and again, they kept collecting names. They also asked the police if they could come up with a core group capable of violence. Now, this was in the middle of Redwood Summer, and we were in the middle of standing up to this act of state terrorism with nonviolence. There was no violence coming from our side at all. There was a lot of violence coming from the other side. But the local police gave them lists of Earth Firsters who had never committed an act of violence before, were in the process of reacting with nonviolence, and have never committed any violent acts since. And those people were named as the core group capable of violence just because the police said that they were. They also interviewed the timber corporations. They didn't interview the loggers, they interviewed management. They interviewed the heads of the three big timber corporations in our area, Maxam, LP, and GP. Then they went through the phone book and called up all the little timber companies that they could find. And they asked the timber companies to submit them anything at all from the environmental movement, leaflets, names, anything. So they had a great time snitching us off. They gave them long lists of names, and they turned in such damning leaflets as, come to the air quality hearing, and hemp festival, music, things like that. And in addition to the timber executives, I don't know how many of y'all know about the Wise Use Movement here. The Wise Use Movement is an anti-environmental movement organized by the extractive corporations, timber, oil, agribusiness, all of them have united with this kind of right-wing anti-environmental. The representatives of the right-wing groups were also interviewed and asked to give any information that they could on the environmental movement as a whole. So that was their idea of investigating the bombing. They did that for about 2 months, and they collected about 150 names of local environmentalists, no names of bombers. But still they weren't finished. What they did is they took this group of people, I guess, I'm not sure if it was the core group capable of violence, but I'll have to presume so, because they won't tell us in my files, they haven't released to us who they did this to. But they took a core group of 14 people, core group of Earth Firsters, and they sent out this memo. Richard Held writes this memo, and it says, in order to continue investigating this case, we're going to have to catalog the phone calls of this core group. So they take all of our long-distance phone calls that we made during a two-month period around the bombing, and they put it on a computer according to area code, and they investigated every single one of them. They came up with 634 different phone numbers that we had called, our grandmothers, our cousins, our uncles, and every single one of them, they sent it out to the FBI offices all over the country, and they got back information on all of these people. And the information they got back included names, addresses, physical descriptions, places of employment, criminal records, and political associates. That's what I was talking about, the Red Scare tactics. So in the CISPES case in the Central America movement in the 1980s, at least you had to go to a meeting or a demonstration to be subject to their surveillance. In the Earth First case, all you had to do was receive a phone call from an Earth Firster. So they kept that up for another year, and in 1992, in October of 1992, they sent out their last memo in the case, and it said, well, gee, we're going to have to close the case because we just don't have any more leads to follow. So They just quietly closed the case. And we had a lawsuit going against them by then already. They didn't even notify us that they had closed the case. And they didn't notify the Oakland Police, their co-agency, for 6 months that they had closed the case. And they didn't notify the district attorney. They just quietly closed the case and said that they were done.
And you are listening to KBOO. That is the voice of Judy Berry you were listening to right there. We are playing a speech from 1994 when she was actually in Portland, and this is recorded by one of our volunteers from that era and brought to you again tonight because it's relevant information. Unfortunately, it's so important to know our history so that we can know what's going on now. We can see that, in fact, these things do not come out of the blue, that there is, in fact, a rich history of activist repression and repression in this country through programs like COINTELPRO that Judy is elaborating on this evening. Judy passed away in the late 90s, but her voice and her wisdom still can reach us through these archives. And that's part of the value of KBOO Community Radio. And it's important right now that you support KBOO with a little of your hard-earned money because, in fact, we're here for you day in and day out, and we need you to be there for us. It's a symbiotic relationship between the community and the community radio station, NESPA. That's 877-500-5266. That's the number to call. I'm Ani. I'm here with Jackie. And Hello. This is the first day of our fall membership drive. You can also catch us online at kboo.fm. We are looking to raise $200 for this section of programming. We have $20 left, my friends. So that's so very easy to do. Please be the person to put us over the top of the goal for this hour of programming and make sure that your community radio station is staying strong.
And with that, we would also like to send a shout out and big thank you to Veronica Sobel from Canby. She is a new member and has called in and saying that she loves our programming and it has been very informative. And you too can be awesome like Veronica and call in and donate what you can. Just for $5 a month, $6 a month, you, the listener, can be the wind beneath our wings. Give us a call, 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm. Every little bit helps, people. We help get this on the air, get Judy's message out there for the world to hear.
So many messages. That's what KBOO is here for. We are here to make sure people are able to share stories, to share analysis, to share thoughts, opinions, ideas, controversial and neglected perspectives. That's actually written in our program charter. Looking at our inherent values of peace, democracy, human rights, multiculturalism, freedom of expression, environmentalism, and social change work. These are all inherent values to KBOO's news and public affairs. And in fact, the way we live our lives here at the station together. This is the way we build our community at the community radio station. And right now we're asking you to please reflect on the importance that KBOO has had in your life and the relevance that KBOO continues to bring you so that we can, in fact, apply the lessons of history to our current affairs so that we can live in a way that is not ahistorical, so that we can, in fact, grow stronger together because we know that collective action gets the goods. And right now, the action we're asking you to take is picking up your phone and dialing 877-500-5266. Your one-time contribution on a credit card or asking us to send you a bill, you can send back a check. It's a wonderful thing. We would love to have your participation in that way, if that way works for you. I know I myself am able to give far more money over the course of a year if I can do it in little tiny chunks every month than I can at any given time. So please, if you can make a monthly commitment to your community, do so right now. Give us a phone call at 877-500-5266. Or you can check us out online. You can start an EFT that way. You can donate with your credit card. Any of these options are available to you online, kboo.fm. Of course, you can come down to 20 Southeast 8th, and we'd love to meet you. We'll give you a tour of the station. You can find the folks that create the radio programs that you listen to and see how your money is spent here in service to the community, 20 Southeast 8th.
And find us on Twitter at KBOO. Send us your thoughts, supports, and questions there. Follow our page on Facebook for the latest updates and great giveaways during the drive. In a Twitter search, you can look for hashtag support KBOO and read the great tweets from our supporters. And, you know, if you're curious what the hubbub is about, if you're new listening to KBOO, you know, you can find that hashtag and see what people have to say about our great station and find out ways that you can contribute, like going to kboo.fm or giving us a call at 877-500-5266. There you go. There's another one. You know, and I remember a story about a guy who came in with a huge water tub of change
donate.
Come on down, say hi with your huge water jug of change. Have you been collecting pocket changes for the last 20 years? Come on down, donate it to KBOO at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue or give us a call, 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm. We would love to hear from you.
Absolutely. We can put your spare change to work for social change right here at your community radio station. It's an, you know, again, however you can do it, however you are able to participate, we want your participation, we want your membership, we want your voice here making our community stronger so that we can keep providing this platform to get so many thoughts, opinions, and analyses out there so that we can share culture, we can share stories, we can share ideas, we can share art and music too. It's all a part of this big community that is KBOO, and you, my friend, are a part of it. You're listening right now. You're already a part with your heart. Now join with your pocketbook as well. 877-500-5266.
We return to the speech by Judy Berry.
Not surprisingly, the bomber still remains at large 4.5 years later. But there did come one good thing out of this, and that is that the day that we released these photos, which we got from the lawsuit, from the right of discovery in the lawsuit, the day that we released these photos, which revealed without a doubt the FBI knowingly lied when they said that the bomb was in the back seat of the car, Richard Held resigned. He was 52 years old, in the height of his career, and he now has gone to his new job where he's the chief of security for Visa Corporations. And the other thing that happened was that Redwood Summer went on. This bombing was meant to disrupt it. It was meant to destroy it. It was meant to scare people away. It was meant to make people think that Earth First was a terrorist group. And what happened was that that didn't happen. What happened was that 3,000 people came to Redwood Summer and stood up to this level of terror with nonviolence and without hatred. What we did was very awesome, that we stood up to this, that we didn't back down, that we stood up with courage, and that we stood up to nonviolence. And this has really had an effect in our community. A lot of times I hear people who have heard of this case, and over writers will write, and this totally ruined Redwood Summer, and Redwood Summer never happened. And that's not true. Redwood Summer did happen, and it's had a profound effect in our region. As a result of Redwood Summer, Headwaters Forest, a partial result of Redwood Summer and also of the legislative efforts, which were going on side by side, because all parts working in all parts of the system, it's the same struggle, it's the same thing, and we can't really separate them. So at any rate, Headwaters Forest is the largest remaining redwood wilderness, unprotected wilderness grove. It's 3,000 acres. The trees in it are up to 2,000 years old. Redwood Summer started when Max Am, who claims to own these magnificent trees, was putting a logging road right into the middle of the wilderness area. And by the end of Redwood Summer, Max Am had agreed that they would not cut those trees. And Mendocino County, the county where I live in, that's in Humboldt County, a little farther north, but as a result of Redwood Summer and the activism there, Mendocino County has just become the first timber-producing county in California, actually in the United States, to pass special local timber rules that are stricter than the state rules to try to prevent the corporations from ripping off all the timber. So a lot of times we don't even see our victories because they come so many years later that we don't connect them. But all I have to say is, hey, Richard Held, you're gone. We're still here. I don't want to present this as an isolated case. I don't want to present this as this happened to us in the Redwood region, this happened to us in Earth First, because this is something that's happening all over. Another thing that's going on along with it, that's going on all over the country, is attacks on radical environmentalists. And largely, unfortunately, there's a kind of a split between the social justice movement and the environmental justice movement. People in the social justice movement are often unaware, and vice versa, of the things that are going on. But the attacks on radical environmentalists, my case, may be one of the very most extreme cases of it. But it's not the only one, and it doesn't break any pattern. The attacks go through all different kinds of levels. Grand juries are being convened all over the country to try to get people to come and testify against people and to intimidate people and to get people to not support environmentalists. Another way that radical environmentalists are being attacked is with slap suits, strategic lawsuit against public participation. Myself and Alicia are among a group of 200 people who were sued by Louisiana Pacific for daring to blockade their illegal logging job that was later declared to be illegal by the courts. And what they do is they're suing people. Slap suits started out that they would sue people who would just speak in front of a city council meeting and stuff like that. And in those cases, it was pretty easy to win, because it's legal to speak in front of a city council meeting. But it's not legal to chain yourself to a logging truck. And slap suits are now being used against people who do nonviolent civil disobedience. So not only are you subject to the criminal charges, but we've been hit with huge civil charges, you know, sucking up resources to defend ourselves and making people afraid to do the actions.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Treasures from the KABU Archives. You heard a speech made by Judy Berry in Portland in 1994, when she spoke at the regional conference of the National Lawyers Guild. If you missed any part of this program, you will be able to hear it again at the KABU website, kboo.fm. I'm Erin Yankee. Thanks for listening.
Hauling to the sawmill, gotta make the buck. Blades are worn and dangerous, better trust your luck. Don't stop for the worker's safety, never fear the worst. Somebody kills himself, just blame it on Earth first.
You're tuned to KBOO Portland. I'm Jimmy. Little special message to my little brother. Happy birthday, JP.
Judy Berry, Earth First and labor activist on the need to support community radio.
Well, I guess I just want to say for the pledge drive to support your public radio stations. Down where I live, the public radio stations KMUD and KZYX have been really important organizing tools for us to even have a movement, for us to get information out that isn't filtered by the corporations. Public radio is a really precious thing, and I think that everybody should support it. So if you want to hear stuff like this on the radio, send in your money and keep it going.
KABU Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Sex Workers film series, showing monthly
One,
at the Queen Street Theater
three.
In Portland. This month, Saturday, October 4th, the Sex Workers film series will screen Guy, Chauncey, and Her Sisters, which tells the story of one woman's brutal ordeal as a comfort woman for the Japanese Army during World War II. That's the Sex Workers film series, Saturday, October 4th, 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kabu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
One, two, three, four.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.